Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Panier, and my good buddy Kevin Luca will be joining me here later on in the show, but I'm honored to welcome Sioux Falls Canaries right-hander Ryan Zimmerman to the show. Ryan, thanks for joining me here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin first of all, Ryan. We named you here at This Week in the Association and Minor League Sports Report as a pitcher of the week after that nice one-hit shutout that you got to open up the season for yourself. Tell us a little bit about that start for you.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, by the way. That was awesome to see. But, yeah, it was a good start to the year. I mean, the whole series was great for our team. My game specifically, it was a good day to pitch and, you know, just kind of did my best to throw strikes and just kind of get through the game as quick as possible and just kind of do what they brought me in to do.
Now, I know that one hit in the game, and I'm just kind of wondering, as you're pitching that, do you feel like you're in kind of a zone as that game is going along?
Yeah, I guess there's definitely some starts where you feel it's kind of like an inexplainable thing, but you feel, you know, more in control than maybe some other games. I felt really good in the first game. You know, those early games are, it's hard to judge sometimes because you know that the opposing lineup and stuff is still trying to get their timing and find their swings and stuff like that. So I'm sure there were, you know, some pitches that I got away with in the first game that maybe won't happen later in the season. But yeah, like I said, it was just about throwing strikes and kind of staying in control for the whole game.
Striking out 9 in that contest, they didn't really look like they had any kind of good judgment of your pitches, which I know you've got to be pretty happy about.
Yeah, that, I mean, it always feels good to get some strikeouts. You know, that's definitely the fun part of pitching. So when you can have a night like that where you can stack them up, it's definitely fun.
Now, Mike is a guy who's not afraid to let his starter go deep into ball games. Is it because it's early in the season you're okay with coming out after 6?
Yeah, we had actually talked about it in the spring. I don't have a pro ball complete game yet. I think I went 8 1/3 against Sioux Falls COVID year. So I'm still working on that. So we were joking around that if it wasn't, you know, the first game of the season, maybe I would have actually had a chance in that one. But yeah, it's just early in the season. Our spring is so quick that most of us only get one practice game or sim game. And it's usually just, you know, 3 or 4 innings. So you're not, you know, the pitches are great to build up, but it's the adjustment of throwing an inning and then sitting down for a while and then getting back up and doing that 5 or 6 times. Your body's not used to it yet once you get the season going. So, yeah, in a couple weeks we'll be able to keep going in a game like that. But, yeah, 6 was fine for the first one.
So, Ryan, I don't think it's any surprise for you to hear this because you've been around Kevin and I a long time, one of our favorite guys in the American Association. So talk to us a little bit about your time in the league and what you've thought about pitching here over these years.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I've run into you guys a bunch over the years. It's always fun to see you guys. But, yeah, it's been a fun journey for sure. The AA has been basically my career besides a couple, you know, winter ball trips and stuff like that. But besides that, pro ball has been the AA for me. And it's been a great journey. To start in St. Paul and being from Minnesota was, you know, pretty amazing. It was really awesome. And obviously winning there was great. So that was just like a dream start to a career. And then to kind of go grow up a little bit personally in Milwaukee was great, and that's been awesome. And then obviously just starting out here with a new team in Sioux Falls, the first few weeks have been amazing, and it's a great group of guys. So yeah, the AA it's growing a lot, and the talent from when I got into the league to where it is now is it's made huge jumps, and it's a really, really, really talented league with a lot of great guys that, you know, deserve to get opportunities elsewhere if that's what they're looking for. And there's definitely enough talent here for guys to go, you know, get opportunities other places.
You know, it's a good point you're making, Ryan, about how the league has gotten better each year, but so have you. I mean, it's like as the talent has gotten better, you've improved as well. And what do you attribute that to, that you've had so much success, especially over the last three seasons?
Yeah, you know, it's been a combo of, you know, spending off seasons trying to get better with my pitching and my style, my pitches, everything like that. So I put a lot of work into the off season of adding pitches or, you know, improving on pitches and location and stuff like that. So that's been huge. I definitely am a completely different pitcher than when I started out in St. Paul, for sure. But on top of that, like I said, when I got to Milwaukee, there was definitely a mental maturing process on that side of baseball that has helped me out a lot too. So just growing mentally has been huge the last few years, and, you know, staying in control, realizing how long the season is, you know, and just kind of trying to stay more consistent than maybe I used to be.
Talking about your game changing in the last 7 years now, I think we're talking about here. So how do you feel that you've made significant differences? What were areas that you were focusing on?
Yeah, so I would definitely say that when I got to St. Paul, I was pretty much just a four-seam fastball and a curveball guy and would just kind of spin it both ways as much as I could and hope for the best, and didn't have great location, had a lot of walks, you know, but got by enough where I could stick around. And so I've added pitches since. So I have, you know, a sinker now, a much better changeup, and a slider that I can use as well. So just I've tried to at least improve, if not add a pitch, every off season. And so I think that's the result of some years of work of what I'm kind of doing now.
As you, for fans that didn't know out there, you came from Division III St. Thomas at that time. Who became like your influences as you got into professional baseball?
Oh, wow. I came straight from college, which guys do every year. But being the, you know, the kid from Minnesota and the small D3 school in Minnesota, it was definitely intimidating when I first got to pro ball. But St. Paul had some really awesome guys that kind of, you know, took me under their wing and showed me how to do things, and, you know, were always willing to answer questions or help me get better or call me out when I was maybe not doing something right. So, yeah, there's guys like Eddie Medina and Mike Devine and Brady Shoemaker and Josh Allen. That just that whole crew of St. Paul Saints guys was huge for me in my first two or three years in the league.
Do you, like, who do you turn to now when you're trying to improve your game at this point?
To be honest, it's a lot of, you know, looking in the mirror and seeing where I think I can get better. I'm always trying to talk to guys who are having success and stuff like that, or have a really good pitch, and I ask them what their cues are on that pitch or whatever it is. So always just asking questions on, you know, little things that I could maybe get better, or thought process throughout the season, or talking to hitters about what they're thinking when facing a certain guy. But at the end of the day, I've learned it all comes down to, you know, what I can do for myself and what I can learn, and, you know, how can I apply it to my game.
Now, interesting, Kevin and I were talking to you at the All-Star game last year, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had told me that last year was going to be the last season for you, but here you are back this year. So what changed your mind about that?
Yes, I wasn't set on retiring or anything last year, but I was just – I've kind of come to the realization lately that I'm closer to the end than the beginning of my career, for sure now. So it's more just about appreciating, where I'm at and what I get to do for however long that will be. But yeah, this move to Sioux Falls came up, and that's obviously closer to home for me. I'm getting married in October, which is going to be, absolutely amazing. And so that's obviously nice for myself and my fiance to be closer to home and leading up to our wedding. So yeah, this was the move was kind of a way to make that work this year with the wedding and everything like that.
Well, I do have to say is, while you had a very successful career, choosing Sioux Falls isn't the easiest ballpark to pitch in there, Ryan. So was any apprehension about that at all at first?
No, not at all. I mean, yeah, it's obviously a more hitter-friendly ballpark. But to be honest, I was, I wasn't actively trying to leave Milwaukee, by the way. So this, I loved Milwaukee. It was great there. It was a good organization, good times there, good ballpark, obviously. But when this came up to move to Sioux Falls, I was really excited about the opportunity because of the team that they had here and who they were bringing back. I think we kind of saw how good their team can be, especially in the second half last year. They made a lot of noise, and they're looking to build on that. And so I was just looking to find a team that we could have success wherever I ended up, and obviously enjoy it too. I wanted to have a good time if I was going to keep playing, and this is a really awesome group of guys that make it fun every day.
Now, you talked about when you first came to St. Paul, there were guys that were helping you along, kind of guiding you in the early parts of your career. You have Ty Culbreth, who's a very experienced pitcher there, but a lot of young guys on the staff. So have you taken on more of a role of being that guy who's leading and guiding these younger guys on the Canary staff?
It's not something that I was, actively seeking to take over a role like that. But this is a really young team, especially the pitching staff. I would say in Milwaukee the last few years, I've probably been in the average, right in the middle of the average age for the team. And now I think I'm one of the oldest guys. And besides Ty, I think I'm the oldest guy on the pitching staff. So that's been an adjustment for sure. I'm here to, help these guys in any way I can. If they, if they have questions for me or are looking for any sort of guidance from me, I'm that's, part of the reason that I'm here, I think. So, if there's anything that I can do to help these guys, I'm definitely here for them.
Are they leaning towards you in the dugout, kind of asking you some questions on what you might do in the situation?
Yeah, I've gotten some questions here and there. Random questions about pitching or thought process on the mound or, just getting adjusted to this league for some guys that haven't been here or pro ball in general. There's just been, there's questions that just randomly come up throughout the day that pop into guys' heads. And whatever I can do for these guys, I would love to help them in any way I can.
Tell us a little bit, Ryan, your personal highlights in your time in the American Association.
Oh, geez. Top of the list has to be the championship in 2019. It was pretty special. Like I said, I'm from there. So, that year specifically, I had, family and friends at pretty much every single home game. And, that was kind of where I took a step in my career where I became a more valuable asset to the team and helped them, win more than I did my first year there. So that was just, the most incredible year and, obviously a special ending for St. Paul in the league. My whole time in Milwaukee was great. It's hard to pinpoint a specific thing. We obviously made almost a championship run in 22 and, last lost in extra innings and everything like that. But that was a fun year. It's hard to pinpoint specific moments. I think I've just been so lucky to play with some great teams and, you know, a lot of really great guys that I just stay in touch with. So that's kind of the biggest thing is the relationships that have been made over the years.
I spent a lot of time around both that, those 2018-19 St. Paul Saints and then your 21-22 Milwaukee Milkmen clubs. How different were those teams, or were they very similar in terms of character and talent, in your opinion?
Yeah, both teams had a lot of talent. I've been lucky to be on some really good teams in this league. I've had six full seasons. I think I've been on, three teams that have made it to the championship. Obviously because of that, I've been lucky enough to be on some really, really talented teams. I think the big key for teams that make runs like that, especially late in the year, every team that makes the playoffs is going to have talent, but the teams that go really far are the close ones, the tight-knit groups and the teams full of really good guys that kind of get along and have fun on a day-to-day basis when, you know, it can become kind of a grind at some points in the season. So that's what I would say is the biggest comparisons to successful teams are obviously you're talented, but it's also a really good group of guys.
Very different kind of teams, I think, too. I mean, just the personalities. Am I wrong about that?
No, probably not. It's hard to compare because when I was in St. Paul, especially those first 2 years, I felt like such a young kid that I was just trying to, you know, stay out of the way and respect everybody and just kind of, I was almost like looking up to the veteran players that we had. And in Milwaukee, it was, you know, I felt more kind of had a place in the team and was an active member of our success and stuff like that. So, I guess every team is different in the characters that you bring in, and everybody has their own personality that can contribute to the clubhouse.
Let's look a little bit more at your team this season, Ryan. Canaries off to a very fast start here, winning the first three games of the season. What is your thoughts about this team and their aspirations to grab a championship this year?
Yeah, it's a really, really good team. Like I said, they've been building the last couple of years. Last year, especially in the second half, they really showed what this team is capable of. And so I think this year there's a lot of expectation, as there should be. And we're, you know, trying to build on that and kind of build consistency and a certain mindset of confidence and an expectation for ourselves, and it's not the Sioux Falls that maybe people thought of, you know, in years past. Like this is a new team and a really talented team that can make some noise. So the lineup is really, really awesome. That's where a lot of our experience is, and they're gonna do their thing every day. So I think this team kind of goes wherever our pitching staff is willing to take us. Our lineup's going to do what we need them to do pretty consistently. So as long as our staff can do well, I think we're going to be a really, really good team.
You're a guy, Ryan, who goes out there and says, look, if I give up a run or two, I'm giving my team every opportunity in the world to go out and win games. I wonder when you're pitching in the birdcage, though, do you say to yourself, hey, if I can keep four or five runs that I allow in this game, I'm really giving them my chance? Because, you know, four or five runs in Sioux Falls is really nothing to overcome.
Yeah. I mean, especially, like I said, with this lineup that we have, you know, you just gotta give them a chance to win. So if you can limit those, you know, those outings that you might not feel your best, if you can compete to a competitive level where it still gives our guys a chance to win that game, that's really all that matters. So yeah, the ballpark definitely matters, where your mindset changes of and the lineup obviously, but your mindset goes from I have to be perfect here, or I can't give up any runs or whatever it is, to I just need to hold these guys down so that our guys can, you know, take over the game and give us the win.
You talked about changes in, you know, adding a pitch and really trying to do some mechanical kind of things. Is there a mentality about pitching that has changed for you over the years?
Maybe a little bit. I think I'm just more in control and mindful of what I actually need to do to have success. I would say when I was younger, it was more just blind excitement and aggression and wanting to be perfect on every pitch or every outing. It was the right intention, but it just, it was the wrong way to go about it. And sometimes that's where those the inconsistency came out, and there was those games, the blow up games. And now it's just a lot easier to minimize those, where if you're not going to feel your best every time, but you know what you can do to, to kind of still make those outings where you're not feeling great, still successful, and give your team a chance to win.
Does that just come with maturity, or like, how do you get to a point of just saying, even on my bad day, I'm still going to give my best?
Yeah, it's definitely just a maturity thing. It just, it takes time to learn, and yeah, it's just over time you kind of realize you're putting mental effort on, the wrong things or over things that you don't have any control over whatsoever. So you just kind of, it just takes time to learn those things where you kind of get to the point where you're like, I know I only need to focus on these few things to have success, and know what I need to do to do well.
Well, let's talk about this, Ryan. So Mother's Day yesterday, I know your parents went out to go watch your first start of the season in there at Lake Country. So tell us a little bit about your relationship with your mom and dad.
Oh yeah, I mean they've been such amazing supporters my whole life, and they have put on a lot of miles since I've been in pro ball and kind of living and playing in different places to come watch. And I'm often telling them, that you can easily stay at home and just watch the stream of the game, and but they just like to be there in person, which I appreciate when they're willing to make those trips and stuff like that. And yeah, they've been amazing and super supportive. And to go along with them, my fiance has also been super supportive, and just as amazing since she came into the picture. And so yeah, all three of them have just been great throughout my career.
So I have to tell you that about 6 years ago, the Saints had a guy who was a scout in the Japanese league, and he was there with his professor. And the professor was explaining in a great deal of his research that he had conducted, he found that when the mom is the more athletic one, the son is more likely to be successful athletically than if the dad is the one who's athletic in the family. So would that be the case for you?
that's a funny question. There's definitely athleticism on both my parents' side. I think specifically my dad was probably a little more athletic than my mom, but I know they both were. And I know I have other family members on both sides that were athletic too. So I think I was just lucky on that front.
Well, that's a good thing. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
excellent.
Okay. Well, as you head into the season, Ryan, obviously you got to hoist the championship. You've had a lot of success, a bunch of 10-game win seasons, and so what are the goals you want? What do you want for the season for yourself?
Yeah, for me personally, I just want to, like we've talked about, I just want to keep on the success that I've had, especially in the last couple of years. I really want to help, lead this team by example and do well every time it's my turn to take the ball. But on top of that, with it being a young team, I would love to help these guys for their careers and, get better on their own personal journeys. And finally, it's just about enjoying this journey with this team and having fun this summer with these guys, and ultimately having that turn into success on the field. And Sioux Falls is really working super hard to make this a really great place to play and somewhere that players want to be, and a place that's successful win-wise as well. And they're doing a great job of that. And obviously I'm seeing it firsthand since I got here, and it's really great. So we definitely want to have success as a team and kind of, you know, reinforce what the front office and Mike and the ownership group are doing and show them that it's working. And yeah, I mean, the ultimate goal is to win a championship. So we're going to do our best to make that happen.
Now, Ryan, before I let you get out of here, you know, Kevin was a huge St. Paul Saints fan when they were playing independent baseball for so long. And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a couple of questions about that championship season. So you have to bear with me here just a moment on this one.
Of course.
So first of all, just tell me that, you know, such an incredible comeback from like game three of the Fargo series. You guys battle back to on the verge of being out and come back and wind up winning that series and then going on to the championship. What was the mood like in that dugout when you guys are being no hit through, I think, six innings in that game, and then all of a sudden you come back to battle back?
Yeah, I mean, that was it was tough. Yeah, it was. There was not a lot of hope there, I would say, for a little bit. That was a team that came back a lot, so we never fully doubted ourselves. But obviously, when you're getting no hit in the later stages of the game, you start to not feel great about it when you're obviously already down by two games. But yeah, we just kind of, and I remember sitting there specifically because I was supposed to have the next game to start, and I didn't pitch in the playoffs the year before in my first year. So I was bummed out that I wasn't going to get to pitch in the playoffs again. But just, we kind of just turned it on there in the seventh inning or whatever it was of game three. And that was kind of it. We just kind of rolled from there, and it just felt like after we got that game, that we just weren't going to be willing to lose from there on.
That's a pretty amazing. And I know that was a veteran club, a lot of guys who had, you know, battled through things in there, but yeah, I would have thought it would have been a little depressing, and they're like, man, we just can't touch this guy. And then all of a sudden, you're winning the game. I mean, that had to be like from the depths of depression to like unbelievable elation.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah, he was throwing great. We just kind of couldn't really do anything. It was kind of like, dang, this, you know, we did all of this. We went on a run at the end of the season and all this stuff just for this to happen to us. And then it just kind of all clicked for us, and we just kind of rolled from there. And yeah, just the entire mindset just changed once we got on a roll there. And we just kind of felt like no matter what happened, we were going to win whatever happened.
So I never hear people ask this question, so I'm gonna ask this. When that final out occurs, like, what's the first thing that occurred to your mind when you're like, when the championship is in your hands now?
Man, I remember we were, so the pitchers that don't pitch, specifically the starters in the dugout, we would always stand on the far staircase going up to the fields. We always just would stand around there and kind of try to stay out of the way and stuff like that. And there was a group of us just standing there waiting for us to just close out the game. And when it happened, we all just went crazy and ran out on the field and jumped around and everything. And I don't really know what the initial thought is. I think you're just kind of blank and going crazy, to be honest with you. And then once it finally settles in, after you get a few moments of going nuts, it just kind of is super rewarding. And it's truly an amazing feeling when you've gone for as long as a baseball season goes with a group of guys and, you know, gone through ups and downs and personal ups and downs or whatever it is. And you kind of get to that point at the end of the year when you've actually won the whole thing. It's super rewarding and exciting. And yeah, it was a fun night for sure.
So let me give you this thought here, Ryan, just to let you know, is that I predict Sioux Falls to win the West Division this season, to have the best record. So tell me why I'm so smart.
Well, it's, you know, the league in general is super tough. We know our side is super tough. There's pretty much every team in this side is good and is going to be a challenge for us. But like I said, we have a lot of confidence in what we can do as well. So it's going to be a fight the whole year. And like I said, I think, you know, obviously I'm biased as a pitcher, but I think the pitching staff is going to decide where this team goes because of how good our lineup is and how consistent I think they're going to be. So yeah, if we pitch well and decide that, you know, we're going to be a good staff despite the ballpark and everything like that, I think that's definitely a possibility for us.
Yeah, I think some are going to declare me blasphemous for saying this, but I think you guys have the best starting staff in the league, and I think that's the reason you guys wind up getting the best record in the division. I think it's going to be an amazing
year
for you guys.
Yeah, the rotation is really good. It's been fun to come in here and kind of see how everybody else does their stuff, and there's a lot of talent, and there's guys that are in the bullpen that can start as well if we need guys. And yeah, so while we are super young, especially as the, you know, for the pitching staff is really, really young, there's a lot of talent here, and I think a lot of guys are going to, you know, take their careers to the next level and step up for this team.
So, Ryan, you're a new guy to the show, so we always allow our guest to give us a final thought. So whatever you would like to talk about, the floor is yours.
I appreciate it. Mike gave me a warning that I was going to get the green light to say whatever I wanted. So I told him I wouldn't talk any crap about him or anything. But, no, I just sticking with baseball, you know, obviously for me personally, indie ball has been my entire career, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for players in indie ball. And obviously it's easy when you've only been in an affiliate or whatever to look down on indie ball, but it can definitely be a stepping stone to some really good opportunities, and it's growing, and there's a lot of opportunity for indie ball to continue to grow. And I think the AA is doing a great job, and you know, there's partnership deals and stuff like that, and they're working on expansion, and you know, they're doing all the right things. So I hope that continues, and I hope players are able to, you know, continue to take control of their careers and move up or go wherever that they want to go, and use this as a place to do that. So yeah, I'm thankful for my career and my journey, and I'm excited to see where the AA and indie ball go from here as well.
Fantastic. Ryan Zimmerman, thanks for joining me this week.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me welcome Kevin back here into the show. And Kevin, very exciting first weekend in the league. We saw some great walk-off moments. We saw some sweeps. We saw some teams who didn't look very good. So we're going to have an exciting season ahead of us, it looks like.
I think we will, you know. If I could talk to the fans out there, you know, if your team got pumped over the weekend, well, you know, it's only three games. There's still a lot of season left. And to those who had success over the weekend, congratulations. And I'm hoping that's got you excited for the rest of the season.
Well, one thing you got to feel pretty good about is you and I, because I had Cleburne and Sioux Falls winning their respective divisions by record-wise. You had Chicago and Kansas City, and how about both of those, all four of those teams are undefeated through the first weekend. So we can feel a little good about ourselves right now, I think.
Boy, yeah, of all things that happened, just imagine that.
Absolutely. I mean, forget the rest of the divisions. Let's just focus on that right now. Well, Kevin, let's first of all begin with...
I think that's what it was.
Exactly. Let's begin with player and pitcher of the week. Both the league and us here at This Week in the Association named Chicago Dogs outfielder Narciso Crook as the player of the week. He hit .556. Homered three times on Sunday. That kind of garnered him the award at that point. Drove in six, scored five times, but you know, just a small sampling, you see, it kind of limits what your opportunities, but he really made his mark with that Sunday performance.
You know, you look at the statistics all around, and yeah, all his damage was done on Sunday, but I mean, come on, a three-home run game on the third day of the season, how can you not recognize that? Feel bad for Aldretti down in Cleburne, who had a really good start in his four games over the weekend, but yeah, that's well-deserved for a three-home run game. And, you know, people are out there wondering, where is the power going to be in the Chicago lineup? But I guess we got some answers over the weekend.
Absolutely. Former major leaguer coming up with a three-homer performance. Alex Troop, named by the league from Kane County as the pitcher of the week after tossing five shutout innings where he allowed two hits, didn't walk anybody, struck out 10. Since we had Ryan on the show, we named Ryan Zimmerman, Sioux Falls Canaries pitcher. Allowed one hit in six innings, just a third inning double was his only hit of not on the night. Struck out nine in the contest. Honestly, Kevin, there were like eight or nine really good performances this weekend. And for me personally, Kevin, it was the fact of Ryan playing against a very good Lake Country Dockhounds team, which his club was able to really shut down this weekend. So Ryan got the pick on that for me.
I was joking with Deputy Commissioner via text this afternoon. I said, you know, Troop only went five innings. Sure, he had one more strikeout, but, you know, as they say, what movie was it, Bull Durham, where he said strikeouts are fascist?
Exactly right. You know, we don't like that in that country here, in this country anymore, so we're okay with that. Go around the league here a little bit, Kevin, and talk about some of the more interesting aspects of stuff. So let's just begin the four teams who come out of the week and winless. That Winnipeg and Sioux City in the Western Division, Lake Country and Gary South Shore in the East. Winnipeg making that long trip. They made a few stops heading down south before they got to Texas. Then you're placing four games against the Railroaders. And what you know was going to be a very excitable group. Very excited club to have the opportunity of a new manager. Crowds were good out there. So it's not surprising that Winnipeg came away being swept this weekend, I thought, Kevin.
I got to imagine that's a lot of days away from home when you factor in the stops in Sioux Falls and Lincoln and Kansas City to play the preseason games and then make the rest of the drive to face a very good Railroaders club. As we're recording this right now, Winnipeg may have finally broken the seal as they did get a five-run second inning to take a 5-0 lead on Cleburne. So, you know, maybe they're getting ready to turn the corner there. But, yeah, that's, you know, that was my observation, is I just think this team might just be a little homesick at this point. But, you know, a couple of really close calls. Had a lead in the ninth inning on Saturday night before Jack Skrilshins walks them off with a two-run homer and dropped a tight 1-1 nothing last night. So, you know, they're right on the cusp, but things didn't go their way.
Yeah, holding an 8-0 lead and heading into the bottom of the third as Kevin and I are talking here tonight. So it looks like they're going to snap that four-game losing streak to begin the season. Looking at the other teams in this division that comes out of the first weekend winless, Sioux City, a lot of this, and I know nobody's going to be pointing fingers going, this is why we're in such a bad spot, but really, realistically, you got to look at it, Kevin. You know, seven or eight of their guys are on the inactive list right now trying to get visas to get into the country, and that was some pretty formidable parts of their lineup. So it's not surprising that this team is struggling to try to score runs early on.
It reminds me a bit of the Northwoods League, where some of these teams, the season starts early enough where they have to use what they call temporary players, because a lot of their better players are still competing in NCAA playoff games. And you're not seeing the real team until those playoffs are completed. So I think likewise with Sioux City, you're not seeing the real Sioux City team that's going to be in the race until, you know, they can get some of these guys into the U.S.
Staying with the winless teams, Kevin, Gary comes away out of the weekend losing all three of their contests. just been an abysmal hitting performance by this club. Two homers, had seven runs scored in their three games, 196 batting average, struck out 24 times in three games. That's not going to help you either. So the one thing that really surprised me out of that, Kevin, is that this has always been a team that has made good contact with the bat. And you know, I'm not expecting a bunch of guys to hit 300 or anything like that, but just a very tough weekend for them all the way around. And they're waiting on a couple of guys that they need that are waiting for visas as well. So this team will get better. The question I guess you just look at right now is how much better you're going to get out of them.
Yeah, it'd be if it was like Sioux City where they're waiting for a ton of guys to get visas, that's one thing. But if you're just waiting on one guy, how much difference can that one guy make? And boy, to only score seven runs in three games at Impact Field, with all due respect to the Chicago's pitching, that's just not a winning formula, to state the obvious.
It's not surprising that the winless teams are really struggling offensively, Kevin, and Lake Country showed that this weekend, 160 batting average for the first three games. I'm going to give some credit because I think this Sioux Falls pitching staff is very, very good. But, you know, we expected this lineup to be really something. So starting off this way has got to be a bit of a head-scratcher for manager Ken Huckabee.
It is, and boy, I mean, Mike Meyer just has to be elated with the start that the Canaries are off to. But you're right, you know, when you got bats like Blake DeBerry, Josh Altman, Ryan Hernandez in the lineup, you would expect in that ballpark at Camp Oconomowoc that you should be able to get runs every night. And they got Marcus Chu back, so I mean, that's four really good hitters in that lineup to come out of the weekend with such little output. That either says a lot for the Sioux Falls pitching or is an indictment on the bats of the Dachshunds.
Yeah, this is not an offense that I'm going to be worried about. They're going to wind up producing, but I think it tells you a lot about that Sioux Falls pitching staff, Kevin, and we'll come back to talk about that here in just a minute. The other two teams under 500, Milwaukee comes out of it 1-2. Fargo-Moorhead comes out of it 1-2 this weekend. Both teams I thought fared reasonably well over the weekend. It's early on, and I know you make the great point each season that you start out a little tough and everybody gets worried. If that happens in July, nobody cares about it. But when you got two organizations that have been perennial Miles Wolf Cup contenders every year, any bad start, I think everybody starts going, oh, what's going on with those teams? Because they're always in the thick of things.
And, you know, once again, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction. You went 1-2. You pull one of those games off your 2-1, and then we're talking about how the other team's underachieving. So let's not try to look for something that's not there right now with these teams that did not win their series over the weekend.
Saw some real bright spots out of that Fargo-Moorhead bullpen. Jake Dykhoff moves to the bullpen to start out the year here after battling some arm injuries late in last season. Really looked good in his couple of appearances. Garrett Alexander looked very good for them, too. So they have a pretty good group out here, I think. And nothing to get too worried about at all. And I wanted to say, you know, I forgot to ask Jack Michaels about this, but What is the nickname that they had for Garrett Alexander? The skinny or Reaper or something? Is that what he told us? Maybe I'm mistaken. I don't think so. I think he said Garrett Alexander was like the skinny Reaper.
The Slim Reaper, maybe?
Yeah, the Slim Reaper. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, the Slim Reaper. I wanted to ask him more about that, but Slim Reaper off to a fast start. Wherever that nickname came from, that's something. I hope Jack gave
it. Yeah, I was a little astonished to see Alex DuBord struggle like he did on Sunday coming into extra innings, and he just did not have it. And you hope that was also just a blip on the radar for him as DuBord gets his season going.
Yeah, because we like Alex a lot, and we want to see him really doing his thing too. Milwaukee also at 1-2, Kevin. They get struggle a little bit offensively. I think the big question we're going to be looking for this group during the season is how well this pitching staff is able to perform, because this is a virtually completely remade starting staff. And Rodrigo Benoit, who started on Friday, did not pitch particularly well. Greg Minier did not pitch particularly well for this club. So it's early, and you don't want to get too upset, but when you go with an entirely new pitching staff, including Juan Echeverria, who was with this club, but he got hit pretty hard this weekend, pretty tough start for the starters.
It was, and when you look at a guy like Rodrigo Benoit, who's making the adjustment from the bullpen to the starting rotation, and he got hit around pretty hard on Friday night, you know, it is going to be an adjustment. I keep referencing Mike Devine in 2020 because I just can't seem to let go of the St. Paul Saints. But, you know, Devine had a couple of rocky outings to start his season before he got into the groove and became unhittable. So I just hope that for Rodrigo Benoit's sake that, you know, it might take a few starts, but he'll settle in and become the pitcher that the Milkmen are expecting him to be. Just don't pitch too loud, though, because we don't want noise at Franklin Field.
Yeah, we'll come back to talk about it. A lot of very stupid stories around the league this season we're going to talk about. Let's jump to Kane County. They go 2-1, Kevin, over the weekend. And the one thing I really came away that I was excited about Kane County, if you're a Kane County fan, you got to like this. 5 homers hit in those first 3 games, walked 9 times, hit by pitch 5 times, and they were getting on base, and they were driving the ball. I thought, what a great start for the season for these guys.
Most definitely, when you think that oftentimes Kane County's success is predicated on having really good pitching and then hitting that just gets enough run support for the pitchers. But, boy, they've found a way to manufacture a lot of runs over the weekend and taking 2 out of 3 versus the Milkmen.
You know, Jack Fox was the story of the league a couple of seasons ago, Kevin, when he went 11-3, leading the league in victories, 3.04 ERA. Kind of tapered off last season, going 6-8 with a 4.05 ERA, and he was hammered in his first start. Any serious concern in Kane County, you think, for Jack?
Hard to say without watching the game. You know, was he getting his pitches up? Was his timing off? You know, was there something mechanically wrong with him? Were the Milkmen just having a good day? It's hard to say without actually watching the game.
The Lincoln Salt Dogs also end the weekend 2-1, Kevin. They had a pretty solid performance hitting, not driving the ball a lot, but did score 19 runs in their 3 games, which is pretty good for Lincoln. I mean, that the last couple of years they have not really put up much offensive numbers, but boy, pitching looked phenomenal this past weekend, and they got to be excited about, because that's going to be the heart and soul of this team if they're going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good, anytime you get out of Newman Outdoor Field with a series win, you've done your work. So it's very impressive for the Salt Dogs to, after dropping a heartbreaker on Friday night, to bounce back and take the next 2 games and the series.
Let's go back to the East, Kevin. Chicago comes out of the weekend 3-0. Krika obviously had a great weekend, but they just got very solid hitting throughout the entire lineup and came away with a pretty solid performance out of the pitching staff, as they just gave up, I think, just, 6 runs in the 3 contests this weekend. Only one guy kind of struggled for them, and so Stephen Lacy looked amazing in his start, which I think we're expecting huge things out of him. So Jeff Isom really doing his job as manager right off.
But within that, much like most of the league, you have to give them an incomplete because, you know, it's a sweep. It's a sweep at home and against a Geary South Shore Ball Club that we're harboring a few doubts about. So we'll see what happens when the competition ramps up for the Dogs.
And that gets us to Cleburne. I think you say the same thing in a way. A Winnipeg team, we're not exactly sure what we're going to see. So a sweep isn't, you know, it's still a sweep. I mean, 4 games. I mean, you win the first 4 games, and this looks like they're going to lose to Winnipeg here tonight. But you take four wins whenever you can get them. But they got a lot of homers in those first four games, 8 homers, 17 runs driven in. But one of the big homers on Kevin was Saturday night when they get a big walk-off homer. And you and I were talking Sunday, maybe a little bit more of a spectacle than you want to do this early in the season.
Yeah, with all due respect to Jack Skrilshans, I know it was a very emotional game as the night went along, as there was a bit of a dust-up after the top of the ninth inning, and then the rains hit. Both teams had nothing to do for the next 20-some minutes but sit around and stew about it. So you have to imagine the emotions were still on high even when the game restarted. And I thought the interesting part was Cleburne's catcher got thrown out during that little dust-up, which necessitated the insertion of Jack Skrilshans into the lineup. So a little bit of irony there. The guy that gets the walk-off homer was only in the game because of the starting catcher for that night being thrown out of the game. Granted, Skrilshans is going to most likely be your primary starting catcher, but just thought the irony was there. But yeah, I thought he pimped it a little bit too hard. I mean, it was up there with John Silviano's home run in the playoffs against Chicago a couple years ago. But, I mean, let's compare the situations, game 3 of the year to elimination game in the playoffs. So, but whatever, you know. I see both sides of it. You want the players to show emotion, and sometimes being demonstrative is part of what makes the game interesting to some fans. And then there's us crusty guys yelling at the sky and telling the kids to get off our lawn, saying, you know what, you've hit one before, act like you've done it. So what do you do? Can't please everybody.
Absolutely. Well, let's go to Kansas City, Kevin. And if there was any concern about what this pitching staff was going to look like, they came away looking pretty darn good this weekend. Only 3 of the, 10 guys that appeared actually gave up runs, come away out of the weekend with a 1.67 ERA, which is ridiculously low. I guess early on in the season, but Ashton Goodell, who I believe will be the pitcher of the year this year, was phenomenal for them. Got great starting pitching. So I think this club is looking pretty good. Dalton Moats, pretty good looking club so far.
And this team bores me. I mean, they're just
yeah, you're right.
Most of the time, they're just so good. It's boring.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no real suspense when you watch their games. And just once again, you know, the lineup is chock full of guys with major league experience, and they're just a machine. They just so methodically go out and win ball games that it's. I know Monarch fans are pleased as heck with them, and they should be. But for someone that wants to watch a competitive baseball game, boy, it's kind of boring because, I mean, there's a lot of nights where Kansas City just, they don't even make it a game for their opponents. And I'm not trying to start a Kansas City pep rally here or anything, but it's just not even interesting because it's like watching the old wrestling matches when the big star would wrestle and they put him up against somebody that they just dragged off of the street corner to take a pounding to get $50. So, you know, you know who's going to win and you know why they do it. But come on, Kansas City, come to the pack a little bit.
It's funny you say that because that is the perfect word that I was thinking myself is okay, 3-0. Yep. What else is new? You know, it's like you're just doing exactly what we expect. So, yeah, let's move on to the next team. Speaking of the next team,
ironically,
Kevin,
I think they're losing the Fargo-Moorhead tonight. So,
yes. So I'm going to update this just to make sure. Down 3-0 right now as Kevin and I are speaking here in the top of the fifth inning. So might see their undefeated streak snap here as well.
Yeah, might.
Moving on. Might, yes. We've seen this team rally to come back in many, many games during the Joe Calpa-Pietra era. Speaking of incredible pitching staff, how about that 1.67 ERA through 3 games for the Sioux Falls Canaries, Kevin?
Not bad. You know, and, you know, the funny part, and, you know, I was messaging with Tanner Hoops during the game, and he brought this up on the air after I brought it up. We haven't even seen Ty Culbreth or Seth Miller yet. And, yeah. I mean, we saw what Miller did at the end of last year. We saw what a healthy Culbreth could do. But, boy, you got great starts from Tanner Brown, who, I mean, he was maybe a fourth, fifth starter with Lincoln last year, comes back home to Sioux Falls. And, boy, I mean, he put up a doozy on opening night, and you hope that, okay. It kind of turned my head a little bit when Mike Meyer named him the opening night starter, but, boy, judging by the results, I'd say it was justified. Then Ryan Zimmerman shoves on Saturday, and then Mitchell Walters threw great yesterday. So, yeah, just three games, three very quality starts. You have to be pretty pumped up if you're a Sioux Falls fan at this point.
Yeah, Kevin, that doesn't even considering Charlie Hasty making two relief appearances, struck out five of the six batters he faced. Bullpen looked amazing for this group. Had a couple of guys who had a little bit of a tough outing, but otherwise, absolutely brilliant. It's surprising to talk about because you look at Sioux Falls and you think, well, you know, they're going to score a bunch of runs and they're going to get hit hard. But I think this is my top starting rotation in the league this year, and I think they're going to live up to that reputation.
Well, when you're pitching staff, we look at the starters. Mitchell Walters has pitched in the birdcage before. Ryan Zimmerman, a longtime pitcher in the league. He's had many starts in Sioux Falls. Culbreth, obviously a ton. Seth Miller, a young guy, but he's, you know, they've found five guys. And Tanner Brown is from the Sioux Falls area, so, I mean, he's very familiar and has had really good outings in the birdcage pitching against Sioux Falls. So now you've got five guys that aren't going to be shooken up by the aura of just how far that ball carries in Sioux Falls. The wind's blowing the right way, and they know what they're getting into, and it's not going to rattle them. So I think maybe Mike's got those five guys that he needs in order to be a competitive team in his own ballpark.
Well, there were some interesting transactions that happened just before the season got underway. So I believe we got through last week. We did not have Alex Sheriff heading for Mexico. I think that was we ended just before then. San Diego assigned out of Lake Country infielder Robbie Tenorowicz. I'm going to say that it probably is. Winds up getting his shot to return back to affiliate ball. Austin Faith, who was acquired by Cleburne, was released by the club a couple of days ago. It could be likely in a situation like that that he has an injury that's going to keep him out for a while. So the club doesn't want to put him on inactive because then they lose that spot. Or, you know, he's done for the season. I'm not exactly sure. But that's an interesting drop considering that the club traded for him with Chicago to get him there. So we'll see how that works out, Kevin. And Marcus Chu, as you mentioned, returned back here to Lake Country from the Atlantic League. So that's just the tip of the iceberg in transactions here, by the way, fans. There was probably about 40-something of them during the last 7 days, and it seems closing down those rosters to get ready for this upcoming season, and we're going to see a lot more of this over the next couple of weeks as guys don't deliver coming out of the gate and they start making some moves, Kevin.
In a transaction, the American Association brought up Peyton Eales, who was very good for Chicago last year and was playing in the Atlantic League. He signed with Minnesota and has already made a bit of an impact in single A Fort Myers for the Mighty Muscles. So it's, you know, Eales is someone we were all impressed with last year, so it's good to see that he's getting his opportunity.
Absolutely, and you know, it's just another example that even when a guy moves on, and Peyton was phenomenal for Chicago last season after he signed with them and was just having quite the start to the year. So it's great to see him getting a chance in the Atlantic League, and then all of a sudden he winds up getting his back to affiliate ball. So these partner leagues for those out there wonder sometimes, they really do give these guys a chance to get back. It wasn't what we saw in 2021 when everybody seemed to be heading back there, but we're still seeing that go on, and great for these guys to be able to continue their goal. So pretty excited for them. Kevin, how about some quick news from around the other partner leagues out there? The Frontier League also got underway this past weekend as Schaumburg comes out of the first weekend 3-0, Ottawa 2-1, tied with several teams in the East Division at 2-1, including New York, Tri-City, and Trois-Rivières. We'll see if they can survive the season, because didn't the ECHL, Trois-Rivières, have to close out? Or which ECHL team from Canada wind up closing out the season and not finishing their game? Newfoundland, yeah.
But, I mean, totally different situation. And, I mean, it was ownership issues with that club that we're not going to see any such thing in baseball with that.
Yeah, so it's good to see these guys are got good ownership groups out there. Florence has Zane Richardson named as the first player of the week for this season. Richardson, let's see, he was a combined .538 batting average with 11 RBIs through the first three games of the season. So good start for him to get off there. So congratulations, and then he'll continue on with success this season. I don't think that they said who their pitcher of the week was. I don't think so. So, okay, well, we're going to say we don't know. So I'll just leave it at that. Let's see. That covers there. Yep, no other big news coming out of that. So let's look at our Atlantic League action, Kevin, as we are there a little bit further into the season right now. And let me, oh, man, look, we even have a change to their website. It's about time. Holy cow, this site has needed some.
Yeah, I saw the upgrade. It looks a lot better.
Yeah, I'm liking that. York Revolution, 9-6 lead in the North Division, and in the South, the Charleston Dirty Birds leading at 13-3. Let's see if they had any news about their player and pitcher league. See, this is like really slacker to me. Usually I already have this stuff up, but I'm slacking. Okay, I got nothing. So I'm going to say I got nothing, and we're going to leave it at that from this league here. Let's see. Nope. So I got nothing. They didn't have any results on player and pitcher of the week. So I don't know if they named them or just didn't name them, and we don't have anything on it or not. So if you don't know, Kevin, you don't know. That's the first rule of life. Well, Kevin,
well, the second rule is if you can't win, don't play.
That's exactly right. Kevin, tell us, what are we going to have going on with the 10th inning stretch coming on now?
Well, I finally wiped the dust off of the blog, and I had a chimed in with my thoughts on what was a real hot topic issue over the weekend, which is the Franklin Common Council ruling that there cannot be any noise above 55 decibels at Franklin Field this year. So it's caused quite a ruckus, and it just seems to be really, really an unreachable goal. And over the weekend, there were complaints from fans that in certain parts of the ballpark, they could not hear the PA or the national anthem at all. So it's going to be an ongoing issue, I think, with Franklin Field until they can get some things figured out or get the city to give in a little bit.
So let's take that into your shout-out now, Kevin.
My shout-out is going to go to the Milwaukee Milkmen because I thought this was genius. One of the things that did get banned also were fireworks, which, you know, that's a ballpark staple no matter where you go, but Milwaukee does them particularly good. So they did something I thought was really neat. They transitioned and had a drone show instead. And I was able to find a video of the show. And I got to say, it was really impressive to get like 200-plus drones to work in synchronization like they did. And I thought they put on a pretty good show. It'd be something to see once or twice, but I'm hoping that they can hit a compromise there and eventually get back to having fireworks at Franklin Field. But, you know, kudos to the Milkman organization for thinking on the fly and at least lining up a drone show.
Now, I'm going to tell you my part that I was pretty irritated about this, Kevin, is that, Frank, you know, the Milkman ownership are what really kind of built Franklin around there, because they put in this field, they put in all the stuff around it to try to build up, looking for kind of a Legends Field idea up there in Kansas City to build up around that area. And then all of a sudden, all these townhomes and stuff like that really started to develop around there. And those people are all of a sudden saying, well, this shouldn't be this way. You wouldn't even be in a house in that spot if it wasn't for Mike Zimmer building this baseball stadium and attracting people to there. So I found this whole story to be unbelievably irritating and completely lacking respect for the owner who put you in that situation to even be in a nice home in that area. So complete lack of appreciation on this part and feelings of entitlement. And doesn't surprise me because the country's going that way.
Here's my views on that. We don't know for sure if the people that were complaining when they did buy, were their houses there before all the development occurred? Well, if they did, for one thing, their properties went up in value substantially because of all the development that Michael Zimmerman has put around the Franklin Field area. They could parlay that into moving somewhere and they're going to turn a tidy profit on their homes. But obviously if you move anywhere nowadays, you're going to get hit with interest rates. So, you know, but that's a whole different discussion. If you bought your house recently, like you had mentioned, knowing that all this stuff was nearby, and didn't have the foresight to think that noise could be an issue, then, yeah, that's all on you. You know, folks, if you haven't already, read the blog, 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com, because I hit on a lot of these bullet points in the blog. And, you know, once again, old me is tracing everything back to St. Paul, but, you know, there was a fireworks issue there when the Saints moved in, and, you know, they made it clear to the residents, okay, we're going to do fireworks. It's going to be on Friday nights. It's going to be probably anywhere between 9:30, 10:30 at night. You know, people close their windows for 8 to 10 minutes while the fireworks are going on, and then that's it. Likewise, anyone in the Franklin area can get a Milwaukee Milkman schedule. They know when the fireworks nights are going to be. Well, prepare accordingly. Don't be hanging out in your backyard for 10 minutes while the fireworks are going off if it means that much to you, because I can't imagine those fireworks are so loud that people can't at least go in their homes, shut the windows, and then block it out for the short time the show's going on. It just seems to be a real knee-jerk reaction to a small situation.
I'm totally with you on that. For me, Kevin, my shout-out for this week is to the American Association and the new contracts that they have for partnerships with the league out there. So if you haven't read this yet, some pretty exciting news that they've done. First of all, the agreement with Baseball America to partner on media and social media content. Baseball America has really become the place to, you know, find out a lot of news going on around baseball in general. So if you are a fan of, and the website, I think they even still have a print guide at some point. That may not be true anymore. I don't know. To be honest with you, but to have a partnership like that is a pretty big deal. But I like this new deal also that they have with Gray Television to broadcast over the air, for those who are still using an antenna, for local television markets and kind of thing there. So one of those markets happens to be here in my Cedar Rapids area, so I'm pretty excited about that. But they'll have a game of the week on. Mankato, for example, Rockford, Sioux Falls, Cedar Rapids are going to be able to carry American Association games. So even if you're not watching on the internet and want to watch on your TV, you can still do that. Plus, they're going to expand that out into Arizona and Georgia and some other areas out there. So you might say, well, that doesn't seem like a big deal for a Midwest league, but there are a lot of family members out there in those areas who will still be able to watch games, even if they don't have their computer and would like to watch on their 72-inch TV or whatever ridiculous thing that they have. So, I mean, it's exciting stuff that's going on out there, and every day it seems like Josh and Joss find more ways to make this league better and better, Kevin.
What I like about the stations in Minnesota that are going to carry it, and, you know, my thing about the Northwoods League, the three markets in Minnesota that are going to have great TV that are going to be picking up games are in Rochester, Mankato, and Duluth, all three Northwoods League markets.
Love that. I'm going to say, and it's probably not true, I'm going to say it's like 99.999% not true, but I'm still going to go with the theory that they worked this out in Cedar Rapids just for me. I'm going to start spinning that angle from now on for the rest of the season. Just saying that openly. Well, exciting first week to the season, Kevin, before we close out here. You know, let's talk quickly about games that are coming up this week, because, as we mentioned, a couple of currently undefeated teams look like those runs are about to end, as Fargo leading Kansas City 5-0 in the bottom of the fifth, and Winnipeg leading Cleaver 9-0. Lincoln and Sioux City tied at 1. If Sioux City should wind up winning that game, they will see their three-game losing streak to start the season come to an end. But series I'm just kind of watching, Sioux Falls heading to King County this week, Kevin. Chicago heading up to Lake Country. Those look like, to me, like the biggest series to start out the week. And Lake Country looking to get off the mat after being swept by Sioux Falls. And what better way to do so against a division rival?
Yeah, most definitely. It's, you know, the chance for these teams to try to gain some traction after skittering along for the first few games of the season.
Heading into the weekend, Kevin, the series that really stands out to me, Milwaukee and Kane County should be a great series. But Fargo heading to Sioux Falls, and I think that'll be – Sioux Falls going to have their home week opener this weekend. Fargo coming to town, both teams looking to establish some authority in this division right now to say that they're the team to beat. And you're going to be there to check out Sioux Falls to begin the weekend.
I'll be there, and not been 100% confirmed, but I got a feeling that people may be able to hear me on the American Association TV over the weekend. And it's always a really neat matchup when the Dakotas get together and at the Birdcage. There's always been some really good games between the Red Hawks and the Canaries there, and I think this is going to be a real barometer for the Canaries to see where exactly they rank in the hierarchy of the West Division. So I'm really looking forward to being out there and catching the games this weekend.
Sounds like great stuff. Well, Kevin and I want to once again thank Ryan Zimmerman for joining us this week. Kevin and I will be back next week with our player and pitcher of the week, and hopefully one of those guys will be joining us for the show. We'll always have a good guest out there from the league to help make the show a lot better. So for Kevin Loco, I'm Rob Panier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.